Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Bonjour et bienvenue à Who Got the Assist? Je m'appelle Tom. Et parce que je suis à Montpellier pour le pod aujourd'hui, je parlerai en français. Aussi, je suis rejoint par Nick, de retour en Angleterre, Lucy et en vacances. Nous avons bu beaucoup de vin hier soir au mariage, Nick. J'ai eu une grande gueule de bois ce matin. Oh, just about recovered now. You're right, mate. Good trip back. Have fun last night.
Bonsoir, Tom. Yep, all good here, apart from the early start to fly back this morning. French weddings do go on late, so hardly had any sleep at all. Je suis très fatigué, but did make it back in time to catch the Spurs Forest game, which was an exciting one. Who got the assist? You can find us on Twitter, Tom on the main accounts at WGTA_FPL. The absent Lucy, still on holiday, at Lucy Hynett with two T's, and myself at WGTA_Nick. So yeah, it's a quick turnaround for the pod today. So we'll just be covering the usual part two, which is the game week reviews, mini league update, market forces, and the Q&A. So quite a few questions, but we'll try and struggle through. We're recording 9 p.m. Sunday night. So it will only be active for a little while before the next round of games.
Yep, thick and fast. Got a properly Christmassy feel to it, doesn't it? Let's just go through the game week updates then and figure out how we did. I mean, very similar, Nick. I think I beat you by one, didn't I? That Kulusevski assist today was the one that kind of brought you closer. Whereas last night, you were a little bit kind of like, oh, I don't really know if I'm going to be able to get anywhere near this week.
Yeah, so 75 points all out for me, which is a green arrow. So that's good. So climbed up a little bit in terms of my rank after the two poor performances the last couple of weeks. It's a sizable green arrow, which is also nice. But I think when you look at sort of the mini leagues and the Twitter templates and a lot of our leagues, it feels very average actually in terms of the score. So not too exciting in terms of the mini league. But if you're concentrating and focusing on overall rank, I've gone from sort of 900k to 500k. So I can't complain too much with that sort of increase. But yeah, in terms of the stars for me, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold obviously with a 17-pointer and Diaz, it was just a bit mad, wasn't it? We were at the wedding and literally like the Liverpool match was on at the same time as the wedding, and just to see that it's 9-0 now and Salah still hadn't scored, we were just both in shock a little bit. And then I think we're obviously frustrated by both having double Manchester City clean sheets and the one pointers we got from Cancelo and Walker one pointers, and just I've just got abject fury at Danny Ward's one pointer as well. But the highlight, I guess, for us was that Gabriel 9-pointer after he got that late goal, which we've both actually got told off for a little bit for celebrating that at the dinner table. Going, so stop talking about FPL, even though it was like a massive, big moment for us to get that Gabriel goal, because we tripled up on the Gabriels as well. So as I said, very similar teams. My main differential, as you said, was Kulusevski. He got his 6-pointer, got an assist, quite involved last night actually. And I have been thinking about selling him, but he was heavily involved in the game tonight, and unlucky to get more than the assist. Nearly had a couple of chances and a couple more assists he could have got. So 75 points all in all. pretty decent green arrow. So yeah, we'll move on from there.
Yeah, no, fair play. I was very similar. So 76, 1 point more than you, up to 145k now from about 200k last week. Some sort of progress, but a very sort of, you know, muted progress with gains really flatlining now. I feel like this week the template again did fairly well, but it was in a different way to game weeks one and two, as the guys like Diaz and Trent, as Nick flagged, helped kind of raise that beige flag higher, I guess. But it was unusual, wasn't it? Because I was all out on Saturday. You know, that very rarely happens where one day you have your entire FPL action and you're sat there on the Sunday just waiting to see how much your rank gets eroded. And I guess it just shows how bunched up we all are, that Perisic, Kane, I don't think there were that many players active in the earlier games. Maybe like, obviously Neto didn't get that assist, got chalked off. That would have hurt a bit more. But Perisic and Kane, basically, in the 4 o'clock game, meant my rank more than doubled, which is just ridiculous, really, that a few kind of effective points on me caused that to happen. But yeah, I mean, it was an odd experience as well, as Nick just referenced, being at a wedding and the ceremony being slap bang in the middle of the 3 p.m. So we had no eyes on what was happening. And it was only when we turned on our phones afterwards that we saw what happened with the 9-0. And it's just ridiculous, really. I mean, given Salah's expected goal involvement in the game, FBref has him at 1.4 XGI for the game. And what I've seen since, so watch match of the day, the guy had four or five assists in the assister moments, as well as sitters missed. You've got to chalk that up to bad luck, haven't you? And count yourself fortunate if you're like us, that Jesus blanked too, and Haaland's EO, where I was actually under 100%. So I actually made gains, albeit again, very small ones for that hat trick. But yeah, that Gabriel Magalhaes goal was very, very good. I think that was kind of the key differentiator. I did Eze to Aaronson last minute rather than the 4.5 million forward shuffle I mentioned on the last pod, purely because Zaha was ruled out for Palace. So I thought, yeah, you know what? That maybe elevates the opportunity for the City clean sheet, and also probably means that Palace won't score. And I thought Aaronson was worth it, because the next three fixtures for Leeds are pretty good. But as it was on the day, it cost me 4 points because Aaronson got yellow cards and Eze got an assist. So, hey, a bit annoying, but it's still progress, I suppose, overall. And just to say, too, that Lucy and I have exactly the same number of points as well right now, just to again magnify how similar teams are. And yeah, we'll definitely come back to that in just a little bit as well in the questions. First though, at the Min League update, before we get onto the market forces, we'd love the email from listener Danny on how to remember the Min League code. It is JUXXXE, or just use triple X. Easy. Quite a few movers and shakers in the league this week. Up top at the moment, it's Glasgow Egypt with King Bongo. A 95-point week this week for the King. He did Haaland to Kane, so a big swinging dick move. It wasn't actually as good as it could have been. I think he could have got over 100 if he'd done that, but never mind. But yeah, still 95 points, not to complain. Up to second from 53rd, you've got someone whose name is in Chinese characters. I recognize some of the characters, but my Chinese reading isn't what it used to be. I've had to do some Google translating here. But you get a third language on the pod today. So this is Tie Guo Min Mian with their team, Ba Bai Liu Xi Ba Bao Ye, which loosely translates as iron pot stewed noodles with 868 pack nights. Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. But whoever they are, they're up to second in the Min League, 53rd, 98 points. In third, Mayor Optics, Tajiri Mayoron, 79 points for him, for them. In fourth, up from 22nd, HK Howie, and also Mo Salah Athletic, Markin Reynolds, both from the 300-point mark already, 81 and 84 for them, respectively. Down to sixth, from third last week, Samson Andrew. He's joined there by Chris Cullen, Ingate Zone FC. Ingate Zone Essex, that's very close to where me and Nick are from. They're both on 299 points. And also Gary Mayo, K-Sarah Salah, 81 points for Gary this week. And in joint ninth, rounding off the top 10, it's Rudy Macias, Alpacas on the pitch, and why always me, Alex Dumphy, who both have come up from 38th and 16th respectively to find their way into the top 10 this week. Next up, it's the market forces. I mean, literally, as Nick said, the game week ended about 2 or 3 hours ago, but I'm guessing that there's a lot going on in the market right now.
Yeah, always action in the market. And yeah, it's all about Erling Haaland, of course, after his hat-trick at the weekend. Everyone's bringing him in. If you don't own him, obviously he's looking pretty critical. And they've got Forest at home up next, so that's going to be another massive fixture for Manchester City and for Haaland. So now he's got 6 goals in 4 games, and you just know that this guy, he's got the potential to break all the records, hasn't he? So yeah, feels like a critical guy to have in our teams. Everyone's bringing him in now, up to 65% ownership, so getting very, very high as well. Otherwise, it's also Luis Diaz, who's also being heavily brought in. So obviously Salah blanked, but Diaz, he got a couple of goals, and he's looking very underpriced now when you compare him to Salah. And there are questions about this. Diaz is only 8.1 and Salah's 13 million. So maybe a few people are thinking, actually, I can move to Diaz and virtually say 4.9 million. I can use to invest in the rest of my team where you to do a sideways switch. And that's what we're seeing actually in terms of the sales. Obviously, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but 233,000 transfers out for Salah. He's the second most transferred out player. This game week, the most transferred out is actually Zinchenko with 307,000 transfers out. He didn't play at the weekend. I believe that's due to injury, so he might be back. He's yellow flagged at the moment, but maybe people using that again for an opportunity to do a sideways switch and save some money, because one of the most transferred in defenders right now, or the most transferred in defender actually, is his teammate Saliba, who's only 4.6 million. And he picked up another assist as well. So he's now had a goal and an assist. So 7 points for him in the Fulham game, and looking like a real bargain, perhaps, in our defence, and a nailed-on option for Arsenal as well.
Saliba! Yes. No, looking very good indeed. Obviously, I think last week I was thinking about maybe moving on Gabriel to Saliba to find myself 0.4, but I decided to leave it 2 points up on that this week. Obviously, last week with the goal for Saliba, I can see why people are looking at him and thinking, yeah, he's the 4.5 to own. And of course, if the season were to start again, I think we'd all be on Saliba rather than Gabriel, but it is what it is. And I can see why people are bringing him in. Interesting that people are actually selling Cancelo after getting subbed in the 60th minute. I mean, we know that Cancelo, what he can offer as an individual in terms of those attacking points versus the defensive points. I'm surprised to see so many people are kind of getting rid right now. I can only imagine it's due to a restructure to try to fit the likes of Diaz and Haaland in, especially if you haven't bought Robertson or something like, if you haven't got Robertson to sell or something like that. And also, I'm surprised to see that Ivan Toney has been sold so heavily as well, 110,000 transfers out for him. I mean, just looking at the fixtures to come, Palace, Leeds, Southampton, Arsenal, Bournemouth, Newcastle, in fact, pretty much all the way into the World Cup, there's nothing really that worries me about Tony's fixtures, and apart from Man City away on in game week 16. So a very, very strange turn of events there. That can only just be people who bought him in last week and seen he hasn't done anything, just gone, yeah, I'm selling him straight away. Or maybe he's the way that people get to Haaland. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one, isn't it? It seems like these early frustrations. And we saw actually last week, Trent Alexander-Arnold being heavily sold, and then clearly he massively punished the sellers this week with that huge return. So you can kind of see that happening again with Cancelo to a certain extent. He got subbed in the 60th minute, so he should be fresher for the Forest game at home. And if he gets a haul there, he could easily punish those sellers. And it kind of leans in, I guess, to our conversation, or at least our first sort of question of the day, doesn't it, Tom? Which is from our fellow pod host, Lucy Hynett.
Yep, Lucy writes in from the beach to ask, are we in danger of overmanaging our teams? And, as you said, Nick, it's definitely an element of that seems to be... I don't know whether the less engaged managers, shall we say, are causing a lot of the initial market movements. It might be with a couple of those moves being made. But we're definitely at a time in many teams where you're looking at your side next week and thinking, I can just turn out the same team again and probably get 70, 80 points if I've got a fair wind. I personally can't remember, Nick, a situation where I've gotten to game week 4 and I've only made changes in one position, which is basically the least important one, which is the 11th man, effectively, the 5.5 million mid spot, which is just pure vibes. And that, I guess, can precipitate an impulse to properly shape things up, because you see on Twitter, you hear content creators talking about how glacial change is perceived to be, how straightforward FPL seems to be right now, and how we all basically have the same team, as you just kind of inferred. And I think in a scenario like this, where risks can and will leave you down on the initial gamble, they have to be calculated. And that calculus, as we spoke about last week in the data pod, is currently based on sifting sands, where, you know, the informational inputs, I guess, they're going into those decisions are a bit dodgy, aren't they? I mean, what do you think about this, Nick? I mean, do you think people are feeling those urges to overmanage, and how are you? Are you feeling them? Are you looking to make big changes this week?
I think there's certainly a lot of managers who don't really need to make changes, because I think at the start of the season, before even game week one, there was kind of a clear way of structuring your team and almost covering like the top six and not needing to kind of have extra characters in there. I think the only player I had in my game week one team that wasn't a top six player or top five or whatever was the goalkeeper. The rest of my squad was made up of Spurs, Liverpool, Manchester City and Arsenal players. And that was quite easy to do. And you had Arsenal with their fixtures at the start of the season, all very, very nice fixtures. And they had some, you know, discounted assets ultimately. You know, Gabriel Martinelli, 6 million. What a bargain he was. He fitted right into my starting 11. Gabriel Jesus, I didn't own him in game week one. But again, 8 million seems like a real underpricing there for what he can offer. And then in defence as well, 5 million for the likes of Gabriel, and also got Walker in my team for 5 million. You know, Manchester City defender, he'd had a price drop from last year. Diaz and Kulusevski, both 8 million midfielders. Diaz, again, another player looking like he's going to be massively overpriced, and you fit in your two men, Salah, Haaland, you've got your team. And or, you know, like Reece James or whatever in defence, and Trent and Cancelo, and then there's nothing else to change. And that's pretty much set you up for the first sort of few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that things will change, but I can see why, you know, pricing has come under question. Like, a few players are such ridiculous value, which I do think is in pursuit of allowing people to pick all of their favourite players in the same team, that you look at it and you kind of think, oh, you know, it does mean that things do feel a bit static. I mean, I do think things will change. I think that at the moment you've also got a scenario where kind of a few prominent individuals influencing the community have gone against the template, hasn't worked out well for them. Not criticizing, I totally understand the prerogative. But that's led to reactions that FPL this year is kind of, you know, supremely straightforward. And the logic seems to be that if everyone had followed the template, we'd all be doing okay. But if you don't, it's, you know, it's a kind of a valorous thing to do, which I understand where that comes from. It can just kind of create this sort of wider impact where people kind of think, oh, FPL is just too easy now. I'm not too sure about that at the moment. I do think what we've seen early in this campaign, though, is that the prior edge that a lot of people used to have in terms of specific data, the eye test or whatever, is now lost a bit as information is disseminated more widely and knowledge is broadcasted amongst the engaged player base, which then seeps through to the unengaged. You know, I see people like my cousin who don't really pay any attention to all of the meta stuff that we're all interested in, has a very similar team to me because he's just seen, you know, loads of other people have got these sort of players in. They tend to have started doing things, so he's kind of shaped his team around that as well. But I do think things will change. You know, we will find something that kind of means that we're kind of forced to make a decision, and you'll have people going down route A and route B. And, you know, patience is a virtue. I don't have much of it, but it's bloody useful in situations like these where your team is actually doing all right and doing something drastic may not be the way to go. So yeah, basically, Lucy, the temptation is to overmanage, like arguably I did this week, doing Ezra to Aaronson, but it's an inconsequential spot and I don't really mind. And there's this element, I think, of having to fight off those impulses within yourself to remain clear-eyed about what happens sort of next. Anything else to say on that one, Nick, or move on to the next?
Yeah, I think I've seen a lot of people talking online as well about sort of burning transfers and not knowing what to do with their teams. And I think, you know, there's a case for burning transfers. You don't need to always make changes. It's not necessary. And if you're happy with your team, if you've got that set up and it's not broken, then there's no need to fix it. I mean, there's always, as you said, there's kind of extra things you can do. You can tidy your bench. You can bring in your Stansfields, your Pereiras, or even your likes of Emerson's, who's now a 4 million defender that's now an option. And that's something, obviously, you can do. But I've seen people worry about players not playing this week. and rotation. And if there's nothing concrete out there, then don't worry about it and just continue on. And yeah, if it's working out for you, that's excellent. You just don't need to overmanage it and continue your holidays and sit on the beach and just pick your captain and move on.
I think that's what I'm going to be looking at doing this week. We'll get to that later. But yeah, absolutely. And next question actually does link to that. So Alan at FPL Diagnostic says, now all our teams look exactly the same and there's a likely mass movement to wildcard in game week 9. Are there any gains to be had in the next couple of weeks? Or is it just us wading in the sea of grey arrows? And is there a case to wildcard earlier to get ahead? So I guess we kind of discussed, I guess, what it's like at the moment. I completely understand that. Linking to the last question, though, really, and moving it on, in terms of using the wildcard, my question is, what are you actually wildcarding to? Like, I saw a few thrown around this week. I've been kind of drinking beer and lying on the beach, as Nick said, a lot this week. But from the ones that I've seen, I've been kind of looking at them thinking, yeah, I mean, there's only two or three differences from the side that I've got. Now, I appreciate that I've had an okay start. So if you haven't had an okay start, you're kind of trying to catch up. So yeah, I completely understand that, which is that I'm not sure if there's the options there at the moment to really properly differentiate if you do wildcard, or people haven't quite grasped the way in which that could be done. So, you know, something like going for Sterling, getting rid of Salah altogether, those sorts of things are probably what you could do, ironically, given the fact that quite a few high-profile wildcards have been to bring Salah back. And if you think, basically, there's a material advantage to be gained through wildcarding at a certain point when the herd isn't, and you're convinced, I'd never stop you, Alan, it's the fact, you know, there's often safety in numbers, so going alone is risky, but the early bird does catch the worm and all that. And as I mentioned, my friends at Praz FPL wrote in the summer, we should have a low bar to wildcard in this season, at least in the early year, in the early months. I do think it's on the horizon for me. I just don't have a clear enough picture of what the wildcard looks like yet, but I can see myself doing it just to kind of tidy up around the edges, because I think, you know, linking back to what Nick was saying about get these players in, that's basically your team. I don't see a lot of those players actually changing too much over the course of the campaign. What do you think about this one, Nick, in terms of, you know, wildcarding earlier, perhaps?
Yeah, so I think in terms of what he mentioned about the grey arrow, I think that's, I consider that to be a little bit of a myth, really. The whole idea that we've all got the same team. I think there's a little bit of a Twitter template bubble or certain mini leagues bubble out there. And actually, there's always a battlefield out there. There's always gains to be made and slight differences that will be critical to your team, even if it is just driven by one or two members that perhaps are slightly lower owned. And also, just in terms of that, you know, the gap between sort of the top 100k and 1 million is not a lot at the moment, but that will just continue to extend and extend week in, week out. The gap between the top 100k, the gap between the top 1 million is just going to grow and grow and grow as that kind of template forms and sort of the people with those players who are doing well at the top continue to extend their league. And you can kind of go for those different options out there. You can go for a wild card and say, actually, I'm going to mix things up and then get Kane and Sterling in. And maybe you can compete in some levels when those players do well. But, you know, you're always going to be faced and you can always get caught out by those highly owned players, sort of the more template picks. So it's a very dangerous game to kind of play if you were to kind of wild card and kind of go a different route just to kind of avoid being a grey wader, so to speak.
Yeah, I guess the gambit is that you get enough game weeks which go your way versus the template over kind of an immediate term, I think you're probably looking at to justify the wild card and having gone that well on the wild card. It's a tough one to do. I understand why you'd be doing it, for example, not going with Haaland, like Mr. Southerns did. I completely understand why he did it. It's just when you see the outcomes, you kind of can't help but think, oh, as we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, the thought process kind of makes sense. It's just it hasn't helped that much to make such a large gamble. I just don't know about this one. It's definitely quite a tough one. The wild card early on this season, given how strong the quote unquote template has started, I see where it's coming from, but given how strong the template has started, it's very difficult to see right now, because I haven't got crystal ball, when we're going to start to kind of think things are going to fall apart a bit. like in the past, I think it's been kind of game weeks kind of 5, 6, 7, where you've kind of started to think, oh, hey, you know what? I can probably get rid of this guy and go really start to mix it up. So I think we'll see that going forward. In terms of the current setups, though, Rishi, FPL Raccoon, our friend from Canada, asks where we can find money in the current setup to do something different. And I think we can link in here goalkeeper transfers too, my favourite. So FPL Amrabat asks if it's worth moving his Ramsdale down to a Sanchez with one free transfer just to free up some money, basically, or is burning a transfer the better play? I mean, what do you think about this one, Nick? Is there anywhere that you'd be thinking you could scrimp and save?
Yeah, so it's interesting, actually, in terms of where there's value. And, you know, some of those value picks are already in the core template. You know, I mentioned earlier the Arsenal contingent, which are all very good value. But what's actually interesting is that we talk about big at the back. But there, I think there's a way of actually playing big at the back without even spending too much money at the back, if that kind of makes sense.
Right.
So you can go big at the back and still have value at the back. So an example of this would be the Fofana move. Is, I don't know if it's happened yet. I don't think it has, but that'd be a Chelsea defender potentially nailed on at 4.4 million. So essentially you're getting that, all that kind of value from Chelsea defence, but you're not spending much money at all there. And the other one obviously is who we talked about, Saliba, 4.6 million. You know, you could make quite a significant saving were you to kind of go for like a defence and have Fofana and Saliba as two of your key men. And that could allow you to kind of fit in, you know, a De Bruyne or a Son or something like that without having to sacrifice your Salah or your Haaland. So you could almost fit in a third midfield premium by kind of making some savings at the back, but still having those big teams, Chelsea and Arsenal, covered for clean sheets and potential returns from those defenders as well. So that's another option. The other option, we'll talk about Salah and Salah a little bit, obviously, is Diaz, and whether Diaz can cover Salah and save 5 million that way, that's a whole separate kettle of fish. Just quickly covering the goalkeeper question before we move back onto you, Tom. So I think, you know, if you're lost for decisions, I think the goalkeeper changes isn't the worst idea. It's something I'm needing to sort out myself because I've got Danny Ward and I hate him. But I don't necessarily think that getting rid of Ramsdale is the best decision right now, to be honest. I think looking at their next game, Aston Villa, they've been pretty damn poor. So there's a good chance of clean sheet there. Brighton started excellently, as we all know. They are facing Fulham, who have Mitrovic leading the line. It's not the same Fulham as old. This is a Mitrovic who's got 43 goals and 44 appearances, already 4-4 in the Premier League. And in terms of actual odds, if you were to look at the odds, Arsenal have a better chance, supposedly, according to the bookies, of keeping a clean sheet than Brighton. So if you were to do that move, you're betting against the house to a certain extent to back the Brighton clean sheet over the Arsenal clean sheet. But, you know, if you are looking at burning a transfer instead, then, you know, you always can weigh up the option and look, try and consider what you'd spend that extra money on if you can make that 0.5 million saving from turning Ramsdale to Sanchez, or 0.4 million, whatever it is, then by all means. But if you don't have anywhere else you're planning on spending that money at this moment in time, then it's maybe just save it, keep it down the road for later on.
Yeah, so maybe burn it and just get rid of it. All right, got you. So Rishi's question, I see where it's coming from. I think it really depends on what your notion of this kind of current template is. I do think that throughout, assuming you're thinking of the top-owned players, these players are boringly template for a reason. And linking back to what I've already said, it may be the case that moving them on could do more harm to your team than good. As Nick said, you can find your way to freemium heaven via the likes of Fofana and Saliba. I do think Saliba is ace. But I don't know on Fofana versus James or maybe even Kukurea. This is because, paradoxically, I think Fofana will actually make James better, because that will mean that James hopefully has a better chance of playing right wing back every week because they finally got a centre back. So even though Fofana is great value in himself, I think he helps a premium become better. Obviously, you get those sort of clean sheet, that clean sheet coverage. But I think that Fofana is basically akin to signing Hayden Christensen, Andreas Christensen, like last year. I think just in general, Rishi, I'm basically waiting for an injury or a random dropping at the moment. There just doesn't seem anything too disruptive to the template right now. And as we said a second ago in answer to Lucy's question, I think forcing it probably isn't the best thing to do. I'll bring in the question from Joe here, FPL Amrabat, asked about moving Sanchez, Ramsdale to Sanchez with 1-3 transfer, or is it Burning a better play? Honestly, the question that it comes down to is, what are you doing with that money, Joe? Why do I say that? Well, very small sample size, 4 game weeks, but Ramsdale has kept 2 clean sheets in 4. Sanchez has kept 3, but he's been very lucky in doing so. So there's that Sinisterra miss this week, for example. And I know it's a small sample, but over the last 4, he's actually got an XGA of 4 goals with just 1 conceded. So he can count over a bit lucky there, versus an XGA of Arsenal for 2.8 over the last 4 and 2 clean sheets. So the numbers suggest, very small sample size, the defence for Arsenal is better, as you probably guess qualitatively too, looking at the relative difference between the two sides. One's gunning for the top 6, one's probably gunning for the top 10. So it really comes down to what you need the money for. That 0.6, 0.4 could make a difference, sure, but how convinced are you that Sanchez outscores Ramsdale over the next few? I think the fixtures for both sides are still pretty decent. It's just if you may need that 0.4, and if you're doing it just as kind of like putting money in the bank for a rainy day, I kind of think shuffle elsewhere or burn the transfer at the moment. I really do think that, because the numbers seem to suggest that Brighton are due to concede a little bit more than they have been. Right, as Nick mentioned, a couple of questions on Salah. Let's take Ian Lamberton's one. He asks if it's now time to go without Mo. So Diaz, Trent, and Nunez, he says, when back, could be the go-to three, with Haaland, Jesus, and Nunez all potentially working as captain options in a Salah-less side. What do you think about this one, Nick? Are you a Salah devotee, or are you open to binning the Egyptian king at some point?
Have a guess. Have a guess. I'm a devotee at this moment in time. I'm not going to be selling him. So in terms of the Liverpool game, ultimately 9-0, Salah didn't get a single return at all. That in my view is a freak result. Flashbacks obviously to the Havertz game with Norwich, but it's one that I think the non-owners actually massively got away with one there. And I think any return would have punished them completely there. So, in terms of all the Liverpool picks, I think Salah, he is the most consistent for me, and he remains the most reliable of all the Liverpool picks that are available. Right now, with Nunez, I have no interest in him at all, personally. I kind of I see him as a bit of a clown for losing his cool so easily and headbutting a player, and that showed a lack of discipline. Obviously, he's going to learn from his mistakes. He's a new player to the Premier League, young player, all of that good stuff. Maybe he'll come in and enter the template in the future, but certainly Firmino showed that he still has a place within the Liverpool squad and a future at Liverpool with his performance there as well. So we'll see how it works with Nunez and how he gets reintegrated after serving his time, his suspension. And obviously he's very, very talented footballer. I'm sure he's got, a very bright future ahead of him at Liverpool. But I don't think I'm ready to kind of look at him right now as an option. I think Trent, he's in our teams obviously, but he has been consistent of late and shown defensive frailties that can be exposed. And he got his first return of the season, so he hasn't shown that consistency up until now, when obviously he dominated and showed that he can get massive returns. But is he a captain pick? I don't think we can trust him with the captain option compared to giving it to Mo week in, week out. And then, when you look at the XG, Salah really should have put a chance away at 1.21 XG compared to the rest of the team, which had an XG of 1.99. So, as I said, non-owners might have been celebrating and very kind of happy that Salah blanked and all of that good stuff. But, where was that money spent? I haven't seen the non-owners do particularly well in comparison of not owning Salah, because where, who did they spend that money on? All that money that they had without selling Salah, was it Son? Was it KDB? Those guys didn't do anything themselves. So it wasn't like there was lots of space and areas to spend all that extra money you had from not owning Salah, all that extra 5 million. I still think we've got the budget to have this guy in our team, and there's not a list of replacements that we'd spend that extra money on. So I think there's still plenty of space for him. And if Salah, just because of ownership, if Salah buried one or two of those chances for the non-owners, there would have been tears again. He still also tops all of the stats with all the key metrics. So not owning Salah, great, you might have got, you know, a couple of extra points above the template average, so to speak, but owning him and Salah returns and not, you know, getting screwed over by not owning him, then you'd have been heavily, heavily punished. And there was a strong chance of that happening. So a 9-0 would leave Salah not getting anything, was just a freak result ultimately. And he's still on penalties as well, which is key as to why I'm keeping him.
Yeah, I'm still processing the shock of finding that out. It's ridiculous. Yeah, no, I agree with the majority of that. I think Nunez remains a bit of an unknown. Like, you know, some fabulous data, but he's not been on the field long enough to draw anything near a satisfactory conclusion from that. I guess, you know, going forward, if you're trying to project, you might find the 4 million difference in terms of Nunez to Salah help spread the cost a bit, and also, you know, could open the door to other characters like Son, Sterling, or even Bruno Fernandes entering your team from the peripheries of FPL. So maybe that's a way you may find to give yourself something different, especially if you're not doing particularly well. And same as Nick, I simply don't know if I've seen enough in terms of Nunez yet beyond the hype, which is very strong, or was very strong. It's just something I'd be quite suspicious of too. So yeah, I'm still, you know, happy to keep Salah at the moment. The underlying data is still there. We're so straight-laced these days, aren't we, Nick? In the past, I may have been like, yeah, you know, just get him. But I think I've definitely kind of seen the error of my ways, or at least just been buried by the error of similar ways.
I've turned you into a dullard, ultimately.
Next one, Mount out. So FPL cousin Greg asked for help with his mountain catastrophe. Does he move across to another 8 million or go somewhere like Rodrigo or Gross? And FPL Doggo also asked, you know, can Rodrigo keep this up? Now, the 8 million the 8 million slots, I think, were fascinating from the very beginning. Like, we're all salivating out over them at the beginning of the season, weren't we? And trying to fit as many as we could in our teams. I think you've got two, haven't you, Nick? And now it really feels like, you know, Diaz has been doing the business. Well, he's got two returns in four, and the rest have been pretty quiet. And I'd certainly be looking, like Greg or cousin Greg says, looking at Rodrigo or maybe Jack Harrison if you're into Leeds. They've got a decent next three. And yes, maybe Gross or my talisman tip Crossard at Brighton if you want to sell off the price point altogether. Annoyingly, there's no Brentford solid pick, or I'd also be citing one of those. I'm assuming as well you've already got Diaz, or that kind of looks quite straightforward to me. But yes, I think at the moment I'd be divesting the 8 million pick other than Diaz. Nick, you've got Kulu and Diaz. Are you looking at keeping the two 8 million slots or divesting one of them?
So, yeah, I'm currently got Kulusevski in my team alongside Luis Diaz. I think Kulusevski, I was actually planning on selling him. I think I might still go ahead with that. And the main reason for that is actually to sort out my goalkeeper situation. So I've still got Ward in goal at 4 million, and I don't have any money in the bank, and I can't keep the guy in the team any longer. So I think I might still sell Kulusevski. He did pretty well tonight. He was quite quiet in game week 2 and game week 3. Not much involvement at all. And I was a little bit concerned about Richarlison waiting in the wings as well. But even if Richarlison starts next week, it could be for Son, just because Son is kind of looking a little bit out of form. I think with Kulusevski, I might move him on, even though he had a brilliant game week 1 for me. I think the players I'm looking at, I think Rodrigo obviously is a very interesting option. Started excellent for Leeds, thanks for the first time of the season, but still in terms of the underlying stats, he's kind of leading the metrics in terms of goal attempts so far. This is 18 shots side the box, plenty of goals coming his way. Good option, of course. But I'm actually leaning more towards the Brighton midfielders right now. Before I move on to Brighton, just to cover Mount, I said in the pod, sort of game week 1 actually, that he was outshone by a defender in his team, and it still remains the case. I think for Chelsea coverage, you're much better with James or Cucurella, and I think Mount's not proving his worth in terms of an FPL asset, so we'd probably say it's time to move him on and downgrade him. But yeah, I think Rodrigo is definitely an option there. I think I'm actually looking towards the Brighton midfielders in the battle between Brighton and Leeds. Brighton won this week, but it's between Trossard and Gross in terms of who I'd pick. And I'm actually, I'm actually really considering Trossard actually over Gross. So Gross outscoring Trossard this season, And Gross has the second highest XGI in the game right now, 2.89. But that's, for me, still a bit of a small sample size. And I think he's had some extremely clear-cut chances that have really contributed to that. And then actually, in terms of taking away from XG and looking at goal attempts, Trossard's had 11 goal attempts compared to Gross's 6. And when you extrapolate that as well a little bit and look at other stats like penalty box touches, Trossard's had 25 compared to Gross. So Trossard's actually, in terms of the heat maps, he's spending more time in the box and spending more time touching the ball in the box. So I think Trossard at the end of the season will have the higher XG, and that's actually also reflected when I did a comparison between the two from last season. So looking back over the last year, Trossard averaged sort of 5 penalty box touches a game compared to Gross, 2.2, a goal every 348 minutes compared to 1,024 for Gross, and a higher XG of 0.2 compared to Gross's 0.1, even with the XGI. So Gross sort of wins on the chance created chance stats because he takes all the corners and stuff like that, set pieces for Brighton. Even with adding the XGI, Trossard still had a higher XGI of last season, 0.4 rather than 0.3. Of course, there is a price element to it. So Trossard is more expensive. It's an FPL asset. But for me, I can afford to kind of downgrade Kulusevski to someone like Trossard and then have plenty of money still to sort out the goalkeeper situation as well. So that's kind of where I'm leaning towards in terms of who I'm targeting. And Brighton, I think, in general, started really, really well and got some good fixtures still coming up. Fulham, Leicester, Bournemouth, Crystal Palace next 4. So that's kind of where I'm going in my head, at least in terms of who I'm picking for sort of the midfield replacement.
Yeah, fair play. I tips Trossard pretty heavily in Talisman Theory, so I'd like nothing more than Leo to step up this season and become the new Bowen. Is that going to happen? Or who knows? But it'd be very, very nice for Talisman Theory if it does happen. Penultimate question, FPL Deadly Ledley. With the upcoming closure of Bristol Zoo in mind, who in FPL can be referred to as an animal these days? Happy to extend, he says, into different worlds of creatures, such as things like spider-like goalkeeping. So who comes to mind? I don't really know. I guess Maggie Zoology. We can go into Haaland having the gait of a cave troll. Aronson at Leeds with the pressing energy, you know, like a working spaniel or something like that. James Ward-Prowse, you know, probably one of those sort of, you know, prime wagoneers, sort of, you know, consistent workhorses, but the prize one who's perennially fit and young enough to lead the pack. And he'll have like a young warhorse, an old warhorse like Milner alongside him. And I think maybe, you know, I was thinking like, you know, a cat maybe, you know, Reflex is like a cat. We always said, you know, there's always a goalkeeper like that, like, because Melier last year was top for saves, wasn't he? But having seen Dean Henderson's pen save from Kane earlier on, I'm thinking maybe you kind of say Dean Henderson reflexes like a cat. But yeah, interesting question. Any come to mind for you, Nick?
I'll just stick on my libelous activity and say that maybe Danny Ward's a bit like a seal and just flapping around, unable to catch a ball and stop it from going into the back of the net. And just, as you said, four points from 4 FPL games compared to Sanchez's 26. Just, I never would have thought it'd be the goalkeeper position where there's such pain so far. But certainly lots of imagery can be created as well from Haaland and this kind of, you know, just an absolute mountain of a figure, isn't he? He's like essentially a young Zlatan.
Yeah, absolutely hench. Right, okay, back to FPL. Mark, FPL positivity, final question this week. A nice segue into transfers and captains. With a quick turnaround between game weeks, who's the captain pick this week? Now, I guess this is one of those where I looked at the fixtures when I opened up the bus team and put it on the Haaland, obviously, home against Nottingham Forest, and then rolled my eyes because what's going to happen now? Just an abundance of Pep guessing is about to commence. And I mean, frankly, we all want to land the captain that starts versus Forest. Feasibly, City need to keep getting points, so why not start Erling? He also kind of got subbed off early this week. But that's just not to say anything, really. I mean, Alvarez is ready in rating. I mean, there'll be all sorts of usual predict Pep nonsense surrounding kind of the way Pep sets up against teams like Forest. But I'll certainly be checking Emma at Jump the Wave and see what the predictors say. But I feel like it's just stabbing in the dark. I really do. And if there's any kind of information that says that I trust that says that Haaland probably won't be starting this, I'll be tempted to look at Cancelo, actually. this week. I'm hoping it's not the naughty steps because he was withdrawn dead on 60 when they were chasing the game. But I feel like Haaland's obviously the standout, or landing a City player in that game's the standout. I kind of wish I had Gundogan actually, because he came on as a sub and he's probably the likeliest to start that one. Yeah, interesting. I suppose most people will go on Haaland. It's just, as I said, the stab in the dark. But I think the City game's on the Wednesday, that Pep's feeling in the charitable mood that day. What about you, Nick? Is it Haaland too?
Yeah, I've got on Haaland. I think after scoring a hat-trick, he's going to want to play as much as possible. You see a young player, plenty of energy. I can't see him reacting well to the concept of being benched after a hat-trick. You want to keep playing your players that are in form and performing, and I expect him to start, and I expect him to do very well in the next game. So I'll probably be giving him the armband for the first time this season, and got Jesus' spice. I think Jesus is another really good option, actually. And he's going to probably have an FX ownership of over 100. So I will be hoping he blanks yet again. So that will be my armband pick. In terms of transfers, as I've said, I've got a couple, three. Probably going to look to move Kulusevski. And not just, I say, upward, it's probably going to be Iverson actually that leaves the team. And bring in, as I said, quite like Trossard. So I bring in Trossard in midfield, possibly double up on the Brighton and actually go for Sanchez as well. In terms of the goalkeeper pick.
Yeah, makes sense. I don't really know what I'm going to do because my team looks good. I've still got 2-3 transfers. So I may finally do that Archer to Stansfield now, just because I bugger all I want to do. I'm quite happy with my team as it is. Like, you know, I'm not selling Ederson before Nottingham Forest at home, I don't think, for example. I'm sure he's going to concede now I've said that. And yeah, it's just keep marching on, really. I'm kind of quite glad I'm on holiday, so I don't have to think about it. Just kind of let it be. And if I burn the transfer, then so what? So what? Right, so well, I think that's your lot. I've got to go to bed. Hopefully I can get this wasted off and done very, very quickly. Hopefully that was useful. Thanks, Nick. The next pod, I'll just solo something, I think, next Thursday when I go back to London, given, again, really short turnaround time.
Yeah, thanks. I'll be going to bed soon as well because I'm completely knackered after a long day travelling and a late night last night. So hopefully you guys found this interesting anyway. And not sure when I'll be next on the pod, sometime soon, whenever Lucy has a next holiday or maybe before that. So we'll figure that all out. But thanks everyone for listening. You know where to find us on Twitter. And yeah, if you did like the pod, just please give us a 5-star review, which we would really appreciate.
Oui, merci beaucoup pour votre écoute. Donc, we hope we assisted you. Speak soon. Au revoir.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.